The world is changing. It's not the same world as 20 years ago.
Zabaleta, Lampard, Fernando. Boni scores! His first goal in City Blue. And one that was entirely inevitable. Just a matter of time. His time came.
European Football Weekly. I'm Dan Riccio. Thomas Michalakos. This is a match day number 30 edition of the show, and we are going to go through all of it. Arsenal with a big win, and Tottenham, well, it's all about Harry Kane, isn't it? And that is kind of been the theme on the show for all season. I guess it's the theme of the Premier League. It's all about the Harry Kane. But right now, we're very pleased to be joined by Manchester's correspondent for The Guardian. That is Jamie Jackson. We're going to get a little bit in-depth here with Manchester City and Manchester United. Jamie, thank you so much for doing this. Good to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you very much for asking me.
Well, you had a very interesting piece, Jamie, on Manchester City and kind of the fact that they might be going with an overhaul of their squad in the summer. So I guess my first question is, where do they start?
Good question. well, I think you could probably go through all areas of the team and say they definitely need a left-back because Pellegrini kind of switches between Kolarov and Gael Clichy, so there's one position. They definitely need a centre-back because Mangala, who, you know, is still one for the future. They're not going to give up on him, but he hasn't worked this season.
Yeah,
I saw him again today this afternoon, and he's, you know, he was okay, but he wasn't amazing. So a centre-back. Yaya Toure could be on his way, so they definitely need what I would call an A-lister central midfielder, attacking midfielder, however you want to describe him. Jovetic could be on his way, the striker who was left out of the Champions League squad, you know, for the knockout stages anyway. Milner could leave because he still hasn't signed a new contract, so there's a kind of a right-sided midfielder or a utility midfielder. There he is. In theory, many different positions. And, I mean, I sort of named up to 13 players who are potentially, available. Obviously, not all of those will go out because we need a squad and, you know, it depends on the dynamics of who they came in. But, yes, I think, as I understand it, that they really are determined this summer to invest in youth. Of that team that lost at Barcelona, I was at that game, obviously. Only Sergio Aguero was under 26, which is quite remarkable, really. And, you know, that wouldn't necessarily matter if the results were better, but they haven't been great. I think the win today was their fourth win their last 13 matches. So, yeah,
wow.
Needed a big overhaul, really.
I have to implore our listeners to go read your piece because I really loved what you did. It was well written. And I have to say, the one thing that stuck out for me is when you said 11 major signings by Manuel Pellegrini, and only Martin Demichelis and Fernandinho can be viewed as success. And given their performances, I don't really see them as success, but it's been that bad for City?
It's interesting, this, because basically it is Pellegrini, but you've also obviously got Cheeky Vergara-Steen, who's a sporting director, and above those two, the chief executive from Soriano. So I took it from when Pellegrini joined as a manager. But all those transfers that I mentioned or I wrote about are not solely his choice or decision or responsibility. So, you know, it is a kind of reflection really on, Bergeresi, the sporting director, and of course Pellegrini as the manager. It's not a great track record. I mean, I'll be honest, Demichelis has been a good signing, and Fernandinho, you know, okay, but really, you're looking at a sort of 30-something defender there, 30-plus in age, and Demichelis is kind of, you know, his last move, really. And Fernandinho was at the bottom five. So really, you could actually go further and say that you haven't signed a standout player since Pellegrini, you know, became manager, which is obviously 2 years ago, it would be in the summer. So I've got a great track record. And again, you know, something which they refer to. All those three gentlemen I'm talking about will have their appraisal, not just Pellegrini as the manager, but obviously Fabio Soriano as the chief executive and Peter Pereira as the sporting director. I think it's fun time that Pellegrini is on his way. I think they make a strong finish to the title defence. They may he may well survive. It's difficult to tell 100% at the moment. Like last season, won two trophies. You can't do that every year. It's very difficult. It's only three trophies to win domestically. But it'd be interesting to see. Obviously, Chelsea are at Hull tomorrow, Sunday. Do you just wonder, there's a slight chance, will City do kind of what they did last season, which has come from a similar kind of margin at a similar stage of the season and pull it off? Probably not, but there is a little bit of a glimmer.
Jamie Jackson, our guest here on European Football Weekly. He's the Manchester correspondent for The Guardian, talking about Manchester City and how they could possibly be undergoing a bit of a squad overhaul this summer. There was a lot about the financial fair play stuff last summer, Jamie. How would that affect them at all going into this summer if they want to make major changes with this squad?
No, the effect of that, what's kind of damage them, is now over, as it were, because it was last summer's transfer window and the January one. So those restrictions will be over, will be lifted, if you like,
right,
this summer. So obviously they have to still fall into general regulations on which they fell foul in the first place, you understand what I'm getting at. But because they fell foul, they had a £49 million transfer net spend limit. So, the ins and outs could be more than £49 million. So that kind of, they did kind of snook them a little bit, but they still had... You're still able to pay 42, 43 million for a Mangala, for a central defender, a record, etc. So, but yeah, I mean, it has the one club that, in the English Premier League anyway, that's come out of these new restrictions, laughing really, is Manchester United because of the level of their turnover.
Yeah.
It's restricting, Chelsea, Manchester City, because their turnover isn't as sort of massive as United's. But Manchester United, for example, they have this new Adidas kit deal that kicks in from the next season. That's £700 million over 10 years. So it's £70 million a year. If you want to put it in player, characterise it by players, it's like buying a Luis Suarez or something. That's just a loan from, just from this kit deal. That's how much money United have. So, be interested to see what they did this summer as well. But going on to United a little bit, they're obviously at Liverpool tomorrow, sort of English football's biggest game, really. If they beat Liverpool, Lou Van Gaal asked the question, will it kill off Liverpool's Champions League hope? Well, said Van Gaal, and I think he's right, but it would be a bit of a blow to Liverpool. And of course, the reverse would be true if United are beaten.
I'm not far off in saying that City don't care about having a loss in transfers, and you've put down a gauntlet of players that are going to be sold this summer, potentially. And my question, though, is will they be able to actually move these players because they're on big contracts, and I don't really see other clubs picking up those hefty contracts.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I think the answer to that question is, for some of them, yes. I mean, it's an interesting one. If you take, say, a striker like Eden Dzeko, who signed, he's one of these sort of five or six big players who sign new deals. Well, his basic, I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's something, obviously it's a lot of money, but in kind of the terms we're talking about or thinking about, it's not a massive amount. It's something like, you have to forgive me, it's something like 120, maybe 130 in that region, which is a lot of money, as I say, but in the kind of the landscape of European stroke Premier League football, that's affordable. And there's a lot of players in and around that region, because how City structure their deals is you get a basic, which is obviously handsome, but then there's a lot of incentives built into there for wins and goals and, qualification for the Champions League and winning this cup and winning that cup. So, someone like Yaya Touré is the highest paid player there. He's on a basic of 220 grand, but with all the additions I just mentioned, if they kick in, you could probably add another 20 or 30 to that. And then it goes down. So, yeah, it is a fair point what you say, but I think the kind of wages we're talking about, the basic, it is affordable by other kind of, near top draw Premier League or European clubs.
Jamie Jackson, our guest, just want to finish off this City conversation before we get to Manchester United for a minute. And I have to ask, what is the future of Manuel Pellegrini, and what is the future at the managerial position for Manchester City?
Yeah, I think... If they have a strong finish to the season, which they've obviously started off by doing that today, beating West Brom 3-0, very easily, very handsomely, The wrong player was sent off after a minute and a half, which didn't help. But to answer your question, it's in the balance. But I have to say, being in and around Manuel Pellegrini, he's a cool, calm customer anyway, if you know what I mean. He's not much ruffles in. The latest information is that, you know, it's not, as I say, cut and dried either way. I would not be surprised if he stays another season, because he's got a year after, at the end of this season, he'll have one more year left of his contract. There doesn't seem to be any signs of him being offered a new contract, probably because for the reasons we're talking about, but also because they would love Pep Guardiola there. Now, you know, who wouldn't love Pep Guardiola there? But the thinking is, if he sees out his Bayern Munich contract, as he said he will do, then that takes Guardiola to the end of next season, which obviously would be the final season of Pellegrini's contract. So, you know, if you're going to get rid of Pellegrini now or at the end of this season, who do you get in? You don't fancy Ancelotti, as I understand it. You don't fancy Diego Simeone, the Atletico Madrid coach. So then you're starting to look around. Brendan Rodgers as a potential management stuff, yes, but is he really an upgrade on Pellegrini at the moment? Some might argue yes or no, but, you know, once you start to look at it, you can see maybe why, if they felt they had a very good chance of getting Guardiola, you know, why not let Pellegrini, you know, stay another season and then hopefully get Pep Guardiola? So that might be what occurs.
Very interesting stuff. Speaking of managers, over on the Red side, it seems like all everybody talks about these days is Louis van Gaal when it comes to Manchester United. He is quite the eccentric character. We've enjoyed him while watching the Premier League this season, for sure. But what would you say is the biggest difference between he and David Moyes? Since you follow the team, you've been very close with both of them, I guess.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I obviously... did all of last season, went on tour with David Moyes in their summer tour, and it's exactly the same with Van Gaal. So, you know, the reason I mentioned the tours is because when you go on these summer tours to America, and, you know, with Moyes, it was Australia and Japan and China, etc., Thailand, you get a lot more close to the team because you're allowed into training, the last training session before the games, and you can see the whole thing, little things like that. So, the main difference, really, and it might sound a little bit simple, is that Van Gaal has got the knack of getting his Manchester United team to win when they're playing pretty average. Whereas with Moyes, they were playing pretty average and they just weren't getting the results.
Yeah.
And I think that's obviously to do with Van Gaal's management. I mean, he's been there and done it, and he has this knack. So everyone has been saying, until the Spurs performance, which was probably the best United performance that I've seen since covering the last season of Ferguson, when they won the title, which is obviously 2 years ago now. That performance against Spurs was kind of what Edward Wood, the executive vice chairman of Manchester United, was hoping for when he hired Louis van Gaal, because that's kind of his track record. He, you know, when his teams play well, they press high, lots of energy. And to be fair to van Gaal, you know, on the one hand, he said it will take 3 months, and obviously the 3 month mark came and went in kind of October when he first started, and it wasn't really happening. But he did say, or he's continued to say, that it will click. It just takes time, because I don't know how much notice you've been taking of it, but he has this phrase, or he sort of talks about retraining players to use their brains rather than play with instinct. Now, you know, when we heard this first on the tour, I think it was in Washington when we had our sit down with him, we were thinking, oh, this is interesting. He's going to take seasoned professionals, top professionals, who've won leagues and all the rest of it, and basically, you know, remodel how they play the game that they play since little boys, you know, to go against their instinct, to sort of think more.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, that is going to take some time, isn't it? Well, it does seem to have kicked in now. Again, Van Gaal on Friday was saying, yeah, Spurs was a great performance, but we have to beat Liverpool in a similar fashion, and then we have to win the game after that. And then maybe we can start to say, OK, we are there or approaching where he wants United to be. So, you know, it'd be interesting. I can't wait to see the game tomorrow, because, you know, that's a big test, isn't it? They're away, it's Liverpool. Traditionally, United might get results at Liverpool, but they don't always play brilliantly there. Rooney's only scored once in 10 career appearances there. That's 8 for United, 2 for Everton. I think that goal was like 10 or 11 years ago. So he's got a bit of a challenge on as well, Rooney, as the captain, etc. So it'll just be interesting to see. Everyone you talk to about Van Gaal, and obviously his track record says as well, is that he wins stuff. And, you know, this summer now that we're entering, obviously they need to finish in the top four. I think they will do. This is the summer where I think he can really get the team, the sort of players he wants, to have the team completely how he wants.
There's been a lot of, you know, rumored rift between and between Angel Di Maria and Radamel Falcao not liking their role and how they've been handled, and, you know, given their performances, I totally support Van Gaal keeping them off and pulling them out. However, do you see Van Gaal here for the long haul, and do you see him being able to get the best out of these type of players? Like, given the situations, he has the stature to, you know, demand obedience. But these players, will they respond?
Well, to take those two names, I don't think Falcao will be at the club next season. Or to put it another way, it'd be a surprise if he is, just because I think he's going to cost 43. They have an option, United. It's going to cost like 42, 43 million pounds to take up that option. Well, with the greatest respect to Radamel Falcao, even for half that price, I think they would have a decision to make. United, I don't think it would be at that, you know, let's take him for 21, 22. It's just not happened for him, and it's not happening for him. There's some very interesting stuff. I don't know if you saw this, in which his former agent, who's obviously still a friend of his, said that in the recent game when he was asked to play in the reserve, at the under-21 Manchester United team, this is about 10 days ago, so sort of, not this Wednesday gone or Tuesday gone, but the one before, he spent 20 minutes talking to Falcao on the way to this reserve game, and he was quoted as saying that Falcao said to him, I don't know how to, you know, I'm paraphrasing it, but basically, I don't know how to handle this, it's never happened to me before. And this friend also said that they had cried many times about Falcao's situation, how it's not working for him at United. So I don't think, who knows, but I don't think he'll be at the club. Di Maria is a bit more interesting one because he's obviously a British record, 59.7, was it, million transfer fee. He was a Van Gaal, you know, he really wanted him. He talked about it before, talked about him as being one of the best wingers in the world. But, you know, again, will he get into the side tomorrow? Because he's suspended for the Spurs game, Di Maria. Will, you know, why would you change that team? I mean, he may well do, but I think Di Maria, Van Gaal wants it to work. He wants him to work. He sees a heck of a player there. He's like man of the match in the Champions League final in May for Real Madrid. As I say, he was definitely a Van Gaal identification at the signing, whereas the players like Shaw and Herrera, he signed off on, you know, but they were already identified by the sort of previous regime of Moyes, etc. But Di Maria is one of his players. So I think there's a very, very good player. And I also think there's a Manchester United-type player there, if you know what I mean, which is a sort of, you know, a fast-pacey, attack-minded player. So, yeah, I think there's work to do there. And I think Van Gaal, to be fair to him, you know, it's not that he is, you know, on one hand, maybe man management isn't necessarily his best strength, but he is a good man manager of players. And so if Di Maria does it in training, he will get a chance. And I think the other players there responding to the fact that someone like Di Maria, you know, has been getting taken off at half-time, just after half-time, and saying, OK, this guy is fair. He always says Van Gaal, I don't go on name, I just go on how players are playing, which you think any manager would do. But it is difficult to sort of, you know, take off a nearly £60 million player unless you've got, you know, courage. And I think the other players have responded to this and said, okay, this guy does give you a chance. But, you know, that is obviously for the good of the team.
Jamie Jackson, our guest here on European Football Weekly. You can follow him at Jamie Jackson. Is that a double underscore at the end of your Twitter handle there, Jamie?
It's actually a treble one because the single and the double underscore Jamie Jackson are gone.
Your name is that common. But for my money, you are the best Jamie Jackson on Twitter. So we'll keep following you. And we'll thank you again for joining us here on the show. We hope to talk to you again soon.
That's very kind of you. Thanks ever so much.
And that is Jamie Jackson, football correspondent, Manchester football correspondent of The Guardian on Twitter. You can get him at Jamie Jackson, treble underscore, as you heard him say right there. Lots of interesting stuff to come out of that interview. We'll maybe discuss a little bit more of it, a little bit of reaction, and we'll also get to some of this week's games right here on European Football Weekly.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
So Harry Kane from 12 yards, he scored two already today. Make it three. His first ever Premier League hat-trick. The milestones keep coming for him. This is why Roy Hodgson has put him in the England squad. This guy scores goals.
Oh, well, you just cannot stop Harry Kane from scoring goals, can you? A hat-trick. His first ever hat-trick. And Thomas Michalakos?
Yes, Dan?
Guess who is the number one scorer in the Barclays Premier League this season?
Good old Harry.
It is the one, the only, the Harry Kane. I know you had money on that being the case 30 games into the season.
Oh, of course. That's why I'm reaping the rewards now.
That's why you're wearing those fancy headphones. I gotta explain.
Real gold.
White and gold headphones. They look very feminine, I should say.
It's okay because I'm married and I'm one with my sexuality. So you can call it feminine all you like. It doesn't bother me. And these are thanks to Harry Kane, because I bought these because of the money I made off Harry Kane being the number one goal scorer.
Now, just to make everybody know this for sure, they are white and gold, not blue and black.
No. Well, I don't know. I got that wrong. So who knows? They could be blue and black.
We don't know. Maybe Inter Milan has not been blue and black all these years. They've been white and gold. Who knows?
God, I hated that. Let's move on, please.
That's the dress. We want to thank Jamie Jackson again for joining us on the show. Did you have, there was so much information.
So much.
In what Jamie just told us that I feel like it's almost difficult to not talk about it a little bit and kind of react to what he said. And, we're all here and we've been speculating that no doubt Manuel Pellegrini is out in the summer. And here's Jamie saying, and he follows the team on a daily basis, that might not be the case.
Yeah, he wouldn't be surprised for him to stay. However, unfortunately, I must disagree with the man who's the beat reporter and who's there all the time. I just can't see it. I can't see Pellegrini being there in the end. The way City do business, I just don't see
it. You know
what?
He does bring kind of a rational voice to the whole conversation, right? Because, they've been horrible in the Premier League lately. Yep. They were horrible against Barcelona. Didn't even look like they deserved to be on the same pitch with Barcelona. And at the same time, Jamie's just saying, well, who else are you going to bring in? And that's kind of something we touched on our Champions League show. And it does make sense. There's just not a whole lot of big names out there. And I don't think they're going to give a young manager a chance Ronald Koeman, because he's had such a great year with Southampton, or Gary Monk with Swansea, or one of the many managers around Europe that are just impressing so much. Unless you can pull a Pep Guardiola out of Bayern Munich, which, as Jamie said, is probably unlikely for next season, maybe the year after. Well, maybe you just need a stopgap and start rebuilding the squad for this year.
The one name that sort of was out there that I think is definitely attainable for Manchester City is Diego Simeone.
Yeah.
I could see him throwing a ton of money.
Well, Jamie just said he doesn't think that they're too fancy on Diego Simeone. So
how can you not be?
I know. It's tough to be. But, Manchester City, they go by the beat of their own drum. They get the 3-0 win over West Brom. And maybe if Chelsea starts to sputter a little bit, I doubt they will, but maybe
not now without the Champions League.
Yeah, maybe it might get into a bit of a title race, but it's looking far from that at this point. So you heard the Harry Kane clip, one of his three goals on the day. Tottenham beats Leicester 4-3, and what a week it is for Harry Kane. Gets his first England call-up. He's got 19 Premier League goals now. Leads the Premier League. The last Spurs player to score 19 in the Premier League. Do you know who it was?
Who was it?
You don't want to say it?
No.
It was Jurgen Klinsmann.
I know, I have it on the sheet.
I wanted to make sure you read the lineup
before we started the show. You wrote it down, I wanted you to say it.
Is there anything to not like about Harry Kane at this point? I mean, there's so much to not like about this Tottenham performance, giving up three goals at home to Leicester, and that's probably the reason they're not going to get into top four. You look at their goal differential. They're only plus +5 on the season, which is insane for a team that scored over 50 goals and is in the top half of the Premier League. But, they give up too many.
Well, you said it best, actually, before the show. They're this season's Liverpool.
Well, Liverpool finished second, though, last year.
But, I mean, from a defensive standpoint, the way they leak goals, you almost look at it and say, they're so unlucky. How did that happen? Oh, a deflection here or there. But their positioning is poor defensively.
And they're soft. They're still soft.
Very soft. Very soft.
You know, they've shown some games where they have a little bit of metal to them. But, in a game like today against Leicester, they didn't show enough. They did not show enough for me, and they showed that they are still a soft team. And that's part of the reason Pochettino brought in Paulinho in the second half, because he's a player that does have a little bit of muscle on him and will get into those dirty areas a little bit.
Well, to your first question about Harry Kane, how can you not like this guy? I definitely love this guy. The reason being is he did it the hard way. He built his way up.
Yeah.
He went out on loan. He mucked it up. He barely got a sniff of the first team. And then once he did, he started scoring like crazy. Started off in the Europa League, and he was scoring goals in buckets there. But it's transformed into the Premier League, and he's looking amazing. I just don't want all this negativity and the criticism surrounding him. Oh, can he do it? It's just one season. Let the guy play, and let's see how the pieces fall.
And mention how many goals Tottenham gave up today. Well, all three of the goals that they gave up were on Michel Vorm because Hugo Lloris was injured in the game, a collision with his right back, Kyle Walker. Looked like he got a really
huge gash,
yeah,
right?
He looked like he got a big gash. And maybe Pochettino was speaking post game, says there may be a cut on the tendon, which could keep him out for a few weeks.
Almost
at the very least.
Almost Rooney like. Remember Rooney's gash on his thigh?
That was disgusting.
Nasty.
I'm glad there hasn't been a picture of this Hugo Lloris gash. Tottenham unbeaten in their last 10 Premier League matches at White Hart Lane. That's what they need to do to maybe get into the top four. But because of goal differential, they are in seventh in the Premier League and 3 points behind Manchester United for fourth place. And obviously, United and Liverpool both have a game in hand. They will play later this morning. So, the Tottenham Hotspurs. Do you want to hear how many goals they've given up this year?
Tell me.
45 goals.
And there's still, what, 8 games left?
There are, like, not that many teams that have given up more than that. Newcastle's given up 48. Burnley's given up 49.
But let's talk about the top six.
QPR, the bottom three have given up more than Tottenham and Newcastle. Those are the only teams.
Where it matters most is the top six, and I believe Liverpool.
None of those teams have allowed more than 31.
Exactly.
Arsenal has the most.
Liverpool allowed 51 last year, and they were criticized like crazy, and deservedly so. But now there's 8 games left, and they've already allowed 45 goals.
Yeah.
Unreal.
It's insane, but, you know, they're still up there. They're still getting the wins.
But that's going to be the difference in finishing in the top four.
It will be the difference for the Tottenham Hotspurs because they just cannot keep allowing that many goals, and I don't think at this point they're going to change how that happens this season. Random note here on Leicester. Esteban Cambiaso has scored 3 goals from just 4 shots on target.
I believe he also has an own goal.
That's 75%.
So that's crazy.
He is good at scoring goals this year. He should take more shots.
He should do a lot more. I don't think, no matter what he does, I don't think it's going to save the Foxes.
No, probably not. Let's head over and talk about the other part of North London here on European Football Weekly. I'm Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Newcastle and Arsenal. Arsenal gets the win 2-1 on a couple of goals from Olivier Giroud. He's now got goals in 5 straight Premier League games, 8 goals, and 3 assists in his last 9 Premier League games. He scored 8 goals against Newcastle in 6 career meetings with them. I mean, this guy loves to play the Magpies.
Well, the 3 assists sticks out for me the most because a striker is supposed to score goals. Strikers are not rarely... You don't buy a striker to make assists, right? However, in this Arsenal, you know, the style of play of the Gunners, he is just the perfect man right there. He has all those speedy, young, attacking, flashy players just coming up, bombing down the wings, coming down the middle, and he's there to hold the ball up and even service them.
Yeah, we talk about him a lot and how much more that he brings to the game than just scoring goals. And obviously, he has had trouble scoring goals in the past, and he does have his games where he doesn't seem to know how to find the net. He'll always get his chances, though, but he just won't necessarily always finish them.
However, for the most part, if you actually look at the statistics there, even the games that he doesn't find the net, how many times is he providing quality chances for his teammates? I bet you there's a lot.
And Arsene Wenger has said it over and over and over again, how Olivier Giroud is the perfect player for his system. And we've seen other guys come in. Lucas Podolski couldn't get a game in as a central striker. Nope. Was always pushed out wide or pushed out into the 3 behind the striker. Danny Welbeck, he thought he was going to come over to Arsenal and play as a center forward. Hasn't happened. He hasn't been nearly as good as Olivier Giroud has. Joel Campbell, one of the stars of the World Cup.
Can't even get a sniff.
Couldn't get a sniff.
And constantly out on loan.
Yeah, and he's loaned out in January. All because Olivier Giroud Not only is he scoring goals, but he does so many things well. Even Yaya Sanogo was loaned out in January as well. So there's basically nobody behind Olivier Giroud.
I can't believe you dropped Sanogo in there.
Yeah, but looking at his Arsenal career over the last few seasons, and you know, in 2013-14, he scored 16 Premier League goals in 36 appearances. His first year at Arsenal, he only had 11 goals in 34 appearances. This year, 19 appearances, he's already got 13 goals. So he's getting better with each year.
But don't you notice, though, the criticism keeps getting more and more prevalent each year, yet he's getting better?
And it's like I said on our Champions League show midweek. There are so many teams that would love to have Olivier Giroud in their team. I mean, I think Manchester City is a prime example. Because you watch Wilfred Bony, even yesterday against West Brom, and how well he played. And he did play well, but that's Bony's game. He doesn't offer a lot outside of being a finisher. He does a little bit, but not nearly in the same fashion that Olivier Giroud does.
Well, that's the thing. Giroud's quality is just first class because he can do it with both feet. He could do it with his chest, he could do it with his head, he could take the ball down, attack.
For a big guy, he's got a nice touch, and he
exactly.
does move fairly well.
He can attack the defender with his pace. He's not that fast, but for a big striker, he has some legs, and he can dribble, and he can cross, he could do it all. So how do you criticize this player? I have no idea. I'm not one of those people who criticize Olivier Giroud.
Looking at the form table in the Premier League, Arsenal is atop of it with their last six games. They've won all six of those games. So
should we buy into Wenger saying that they're even stronger now?
Well, they've looked very, like we've been talking about, outside of that Monaco game. They've looked really, really good of late.
I know, I just always
And it's all because of Giroud and Francis Coquelin.
Hey, you love Coquelin.
I do. Broken nose.
I just have to say something. It's very difficult for me to agree with Wenger. That's the only thing I'm going to say. I'm leaving it out there.
That's the voice of Thomas Michalakos. I'm Dan Riccio. We wanted to touch on Sunderland. They got a new manager, and Adam Johnson appeared in yesterday's game against West Ham. We'll talk about that next on European Football Weekly.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
And Stephen Fletcher is the man who is coming off, and Adam Johnson is coming on. The suspension against him, which was imposed by Sunderland, has been lifted.
More sorrow for Sunderland as they lose 1-0 to the Hammers. West Ham winning it at Upton Park over Sunderland, and that was the final game on Saturday. Some more big games coming up today in the Premier League. I'm Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos here, European Football Weekly. Two big stories coming out of this Sunderland game, and none of them really have to do with the actual game itself. One is Dick Advocaat getting a job.
Which is hilarious, because I think he's one of the most overrated managers ever.
I think all Dutch managers are a little bit overrated. Like,
he's had 11 teams in the last 11 years, including national teams. He's just collecting checks. He's not better than Sven-Goran Eriksson at this point to me.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, he's just getting jobs because of previous success. And when I'm talking previous, I'm talking over a decade ago.
So he last managed Serbia. Then before that was AZ Alkmaar, PSV, Russia, Alkmaar again, Belgium, Zenit, South Korea, United Arab Emirates, Borussia Mönchengladbach, Netherlands, Rangers, PSV, Netherlands. Like, this guy.
And from 2004, yeah. There's 11 teams.
Yeah, it's quite insane, the track record that he has.
Keep cashing those checks.
Not necessarily a good track record for Dick Advocaat. Quickly, do you think he can save their season? They are 1 point above the bottom of the table.
I mean, I want to say no, but given Sunderland are always in this position, they always manage to come away with keeping their Premier League, you know.
Well, last year they were
status.
Dead and buried, and then they ended up getting out because of how great they were the final few games of the season. But aside from that, here's an interesting note. So the last two managers to take over for Sunderland, Paolo Di Canio, and Gus Poyet. They each lost their opening games.
Yeah.
But then the second game that they had to manage was Sunderland's biggest game of the year, which is the Tyne-Wear Derby against Newcastle. And both of those guys, Di Canio and Poyet, won those games.
And it's probably started a process of something, you know.
Like, what are the odds that they do this?
And who does Sunderland play
next?
Two games
before Newcastle every time.
And who does Sunderland play next?
Newcastle.
Like, how bizarre is that?
It's nuts. I don't understand how that happens.
It doesn't fall on the same day, yet they always get rid of their manager.
It's like
before.
they pinpoint a time. Like, if things don't get better, 2 weeks by the time we're 2 weeks away from Newcastle, we have to make the change.
So Poyet knew it was coming.
We'll see what happens next week. The Tyne-Wear Derby is actually one of the better derbies to watch.
Amazing.
No matter how good Newcastle or Sunderland are, it's always a very heated game, and horses get punched in the face, which is always fun too. To a non-funny note, and that is Adam Johnson. We're talking European Football Weekly here. Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos. Adam Johnson. So, about a month ago, we had a discussion and whether or not we should bring up the whole Adam Johnson incident on the show. I decided, and we decided as a team, not to do it. You wanted to, desperately. It is a very interesting topic, but at the time, I just felt like we didn't know enough just yet.
But we don't know anything now, either.
We still don't know enough now.
But he's able to play, so...
So, he was arrested for suspicion of having sexual relations with a girl under 16 years old. He was arrested, but he's not been charged. I don't know exactly how the legal system works in England. I'm not going to pretend to try that I know how it works.
Nor should we speculate how it works.
So he's been arrested. He's out on bail, still being investigated, but he hasn't been charged with anything yet. Meaning, under the FA rules, he can only be suspended for this for two games, and then Sunderland has to bring him back. He has to start training with the team, but it's up to their discretion if they want to put him back in the squad. They put him back in the squad for the West Ham game, and he got onto the field as a substitute.
That was one of the first things Advocat did, apparently, was say, we're going to get him back on. I want him to play. And he came on as a sub, and he was being chirped and booed with every touch of the ball. And the one thing why I wanted to talk about this, and I'll say it very quickly, was because if it's proven that he's done what he's done, I want him to be punished by the fullest extent of the law.
Yep.
Obviously. However, if it's proven false, this guy has to live with this for the rest of his life. He'll always be remembered for this. And how crazy a world do we live in where this happens?
Yeah. And there are going to be fans that will say to him on Twitter, I don't even know if Adam Johnson has Twitter, but there will always be fans that will chirp him
about
this incident. And there will always be people at the stadium, no matter what the outcome, whether it's deserved or not in this case. I don't know enough, but I think basically what I just wanted to touch on is whether or not you think it was the right move for Sunderland to bring him back on the field.
No. I don't think it was. I think despite the two-match ban and all the rules and whatever, I think his head is just not in the game. How could it be? How could it be when you're being investigated? And whether you're guilty or innocent, regardless, his head's not in the game.
And we've seen this so much this year with the NFL and all of their domestic violence cases. And here in North America, it took a huge stage after the Ray Rice video came about. Now, I don't think Adam Johnson should have been in the squad, and here's why. It's basically because his teammates, they know the story too. Everybody knows the story. How can bringing him back into the squad help this team right now? Especially where they're in this dogfight, and they need to know that they are with each other together forever for this fight to stay out of relegation. And as you just mentioned, Adam Johnson's mind must be in a million different places right now.
Of course. It's not a good move to bring him into the thing. Plus, if he is guilty, and
then
he's
you
playing,
look even worse.
How bad is that?
It's really bad. So they should just keep him off the squad, pay him to do nothing. That's the right move here until the investigation is over. That's the only move, in my opinion. Not just from a moral standpoint, but also from a footballing standpoint. I don't think it's possible for Adam Johnson to have his head in the game, and I don't think it's possible for his teammates. There can't everybody in that locker room can't be on the same page.
No.
With him in there.
And look what happened.
Especially when they already got the manager stuff going on.
Yeah.
There's just too much stuff. Yeah, there's too much going on there. And you can say what you want. Look, he is probably their best offensive player. He's got 4 Premier League goals this year. That is more than anybody on Sunderland. But you have to do what's right here. I don't care if you want to stay in the Premier League.
And look what he did. 78 minutes, he comes in, did nothing, of course. Right?
And they allowed a goal. And they allowed a goal. So, yeah, the numbers are there, and Sunderland fans probably have a different outlook on the game. But, look, Adam Johnson, it's not cool that they put him back into this game. Quickly, we are running out of time. Champions League, what is your match to watch of the final 8 teams? PSG, Barca, Juventus, Monaco, Atleti, Real, Bayern, Porto.
Ooh, so many good
ones. We've seen the Madrid Derby 6 times already this year.
Yeah, that's why it's not number one to me. And I've seen PSG Barca so many times, but this could be a different PSG. I'm really looking forward to Bayern Porto.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know why. That one sticks out to me is because I think it's going to be a lot closer than people think.
I just wonder if Carlos Tevez is going to mimic Alessandro Del Piero from 1998 and score a hat-trick against Monaco. That's what I want to know.
You can only dream, Dan.
I can only dream. Maybe. Maybe. But we'll have to see how it turns
out. Europa League's way
better. We'll be here with podcasts throughout the rest of the Champions League season as well. Cash rules everything around me. Green gets the money. Dollar bill, yo. All right, who you got? Creme de la creme.
Olivier Giroud. Creme de la creme because he's just amazing and that's about it.
You love him almost as much as his mistress loved him.
I don't think that much.
Hey-o! All right, I'll go with David Silva. What a day he had. Was unbelievable for Manchester City. And I said it on my fantasy blog. If Manchester City is going to get back to winning games, David Silva has to get back to being their main culprit in offense.
And he scored what? You said it. He scored the most goals for any midfielder in the Premier League?
Yep. Yep. That's David Silva for you.
And another reason why you picked him.
That's it. So, Manchester City win. Harry Kane scores a hat-trick. What a week it was in the Premier League. Thanks again to Jamie Jackson of The Guardian for joining us here on the show. We'll be back probably with a Classico edition. Enjoy it. Because it is a Classico Sunday in the world of European football. I'm Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos as well. We'll talk to you next Sunday.